The Ulster Economics Podcast. The podcast that keeps you up to date with what is happening economy-wise in Northern Ireland. It is better to be prepared for the economic environment we are operating in and not the world we would like to be in. Episode 24, That's So Last Year, with Andrew Webb, Chief Economist of Grant Thornton. Last year was a tumultuous year for the UK, to say the least, both in terms of politics and economics. We witnessed four chancellors, three prime ministers in the space of 2 months, and two monarchs. The UK said farewell to its longest reigning monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, and its shortest serving prime minister, Liz Truss I. Liz's mantra was go big or go home, and she did both that in the space of 44 days. Truss in the economics through the misnomer that was the mini-budget, threw fuel onto a cost of borrowing crisis, which was a new angle to the wider cost of living crisis in 2022, and that rounded off the year with a recessionary threat clouding the outlook and a Mexican wave of strike action taking place throughout the UK. And that was just at home. Globally, geopolitics loomed large in 2022, not least following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, with geopolitics exerting a far greater influence and shaping the outlook in a way it hasn't done so in years. Against this backdrop, it is not surprising that the Collins English Dictionary word of the year was permacrisis. Despite these multifaceted woes, Northern Ireland continues to battle these challenges with one or even two hands tied behind its back, with no functioning executive instalment. To review the year that has passed and assess what does 2023 have in store, I'm delighted to be joined again by Andrew Webb, Grant Thornton Chief Economist. Hopefully we won't come across as the economist equivalent of Waldorf and Statler from The Muppet Show. Good afternoon, Andrew, and a belated Happy New Year. And have a good Christmas.
I had an excellent Christmas, thanks. It was very sedentary after a fall from a ladder.
I hear you were gathering intel on the NHS waiting times over the festive period.
I certainly was. I encountered A&E in the Ulster Hospital and me and 120 other people on a Sunday evening. So not a pleasant place to be. And that's where you really see the NHS in crisis. That's the front line of everything we hear and read about. I've now experienced, and I've nothing but sympathy for the people working in it.
I know. I was up there recently, just dropping my wife off, and on a couple of mornings, and it was ambulance alley at A&E, where it was on one morning I counted 11 ambulances queued up with presumably patients in waiting to get in, which just shows how things have changed for the worse with the NHS. So, Andrew, the permacrisis was the word for 2022, according to the Collins English Dictionary. What words come to mind? And this will be issued before the watershed, so do keep them clean.
That's a good warning, because I did write an article recently where I used omni-shambles, and that was the edited version, because I had tried to use another word which didn't get past the censors. I think omni-shambles for me does sum it up. I mean, it feels like last year was, you know, periods of chaos that felt like a bad dream at times, certainly with the latter part of the year and the UK politics and the UK economics. But when I was writing that article recently, you sort of throw yourself back to where the mind was at the start of the year. And then, you know, I was team transitory back then in terms of inflation, where we thought it was going to.
I was in that camp too.
Yeah, I think you were. I think there were others around the place who very much weren't and seemed to have been proven right. I don't know how. I don't think they could have foreseen what came in 2022 with Putin and Ukraine. But, you know, back then we were very much inflation's going to work its way through. It was supply chain driven. It was pent up demand releases from the pandemic. And so it was actually feeling quite positive and upbeat. And then as we all know, we did have that Russia, Ukraine, and what that did then to energy costs and really started to embed that inflation. And then we compound all that with that period of chaos in the UK politics and that mini budget. So as the year went on, it became increasingly jittery. The thing that, and I suppose that's probably the obvious thing to hone in on the year gone past, but the thing that really I suppose, piqued my attention and my interest was just how much light finally got shone on the Northern Ireland budget and the crisis there, because at various points we were talking about £650 million black hole and how, you know, that was actually very vocally articulated in the media finally, and that I think that was useful. I think that was worrying and continues to be so, but I think that was a very interesting element of last year for me in terms of economics, was just how much attention that finally started to get.
Yeah, because it was fiscal moves, because you had a budget with Rishi Sunak, the first of the four chancellors last year, and I can remember back in March, it was the fact that he omitted whenever the temporary increase in universal credit of the £20 a week, which was a pandemic measure, was taken off, and the view was, given inflation was early part of last year, it was in the kind of 5-6 kind of percent, that kind of level, that something was going to be given to ease the pain, as it were, for people on universal credit, and that was omitted, and it was viewed as a kind of great omission, as it were. And then it was just then how the fiscal thing changed, where we had Kwasi Kwarteng doing his throwing the kitchen sink at the problem, and then there was the great reversal that we had from Jeremy Hunt. And, you know, it was just the number of U-turns and keeping track of that. There was like more U-turns than a boy racer in a car park on black ice last year. You know, it was, there was all of that. And those fiscal pressures are going to become more apparent in 2023, which we'll come on to in a minute. I suppose the other thing which struck me was, it was the cost of living crisis. And what would have surprised me was particularly in terms of food prices. I was away on holiday in the summer in July in Canada, and I was struck by how expensive that was. And I came back and was relieved to get Northern Ireland prices again. But that only seemed to last a few weeks. And then it was like food prices, milk prices. And I know we frequent the same garage and invariably bump into each other, sort of griping and groaning about the cost of things. And it's kind of like, it has been on the food side, and just how much food prices have continued to rise. That's what's really struck me.
Yeah, and I actually nearly had an argument in that garage last night when I got two milk and a loaf of bread, and it was more than a fiver. I was like, how did that happen? When did that happen? It just feels like it's a bit relentless, and yet it doesn't cease to shock me when it happens. It was that, you know, that bled into food and into other parts of the economy last year, because it was very much, I felt that it was an energy issue, but then it did start to spread into other parts of the economy, and we are all feeling it. We did a lot of work with the Consumer Council last year on vulnerable consumers, and we looked at various income groups and how exposed they are. And this isn't just a low income, no income challenge. This goes right up through most of the income groups, starting to feel that the pain. And we're now starting to see that. We'll maybe get into it in terms of where the consumer confidence goes and all that. But we're starting to see more pain right up through the various income levels of the economy, and that can only be a bad thing.
Yeah, and in terms of last year as well, it's probably what didn't surprise me was what happened with cryptocurrencies, tech stocks. Bad year for the likes of Tesla, and Elon Musk seemed to be. His purchase of Twitter, it seemed to be as if he was almost like trying to do a Brewster's Millions, a kind of Richard Pryor, and how to get rid of his wealth as quickly as possible. And for me, the tech stocks wasn't a surprise because of overinflated valuations. Always it's difficult to get the timing of when you think, you know, the people are going to catch on to the fact that the valuations of the likes of Tesla were what they were, and I think they're down about 70% from where they were. So all of those kind of things, again, cryptocurrency. If we have any investors listening to this podcast who were in cryptocurrency, you know who you were. And
you're brave going after the crypto bros. They'll be coming for you.
I know. It's just, to me, I'm just like a simple, unsophisticated vanilla investor who just doesn't see all of that. But I suppose with the cost of living crisis and this whole talk of recession, because what the start of last year, we were in pandemic recovery mode. We knew it was going to be a challenging year. Then evil Mr. Putin came along and sort of Vlad the invader became Vlad the inflator, poured more fuel onto inflationary pressures. And then what we saw was economic growth petered out, confidence ebbed away. And then at the end of this year, it's all, you know, it's talk about then. Well, today we had figures from NISRA, which were showing that Northern Ireland is officially, technically in recession, two consecutive quarters of decline, second quarter and third quarter. And now it's like concern as what's going to happen in 2023. And I suppose this whole recession, or I believe you have a word for where we are even before we hit recession.
Only heard this word today for first, which is precession, and which is a period like we're in at the minute where it's decline, but in 6 months when we look back, it's going to feel like it wasn't that bad after all, and that feels like we were now with where we're likely to go. So we're in a precessionary period.
And then we maybe have like a post-recession cigar or something to then sort of look back on it. But I suppose in terms of the whole idea of recession, I know sort of the underground or the undercover economist in you is out and about going around looking in businesses and whenever what you see out and about. And are you picking up any recessionary intel of how you're seeing how people are adapting to the recession or cost of living crisis?
Absolutely. I've always been a fan of the economics of walking about, or over Christmas, the economics of hobbling about on my crutches. But I felt it was research driven, so I had to do it. So I've a few evenings out. Taxi drivers are always a great source of insights for what's happening in the economy, and it's shaping up to be pretty difficult. Even other, you know, service provider, where I'm hearing in hospitality that restaurants are now closing more days per week than they would have otherwise done, just to save on purchasing in materials and using gas and electricity. So there's lots happening, and business models are shifting, just trying to adapt to the new context we're in, and that context being higher energy prices, inflation that's higher for longer, and a consumer that's exceptionally jittery and is looking at ways to reduce how it spends.
Yeah, I know some of the kind of intel I'm picking up is in the local hairdressers, and I know you're maybe looking at me going sort of like, what are you doing in there? And working from home, sometimes there's just work avoidance tactics go. Instead of start turning the computer on, it's go down and have a chat. Have a chat and find out what the hairdressers are seeing. And one of them, what they're talking about is then similar to what you're saying about the kind of restaurants, is then looking at closing an additional day so that they won't have the energy costs, and then plus any gaps that they have sort of during the week, customers will then adapt to that and then start filling those in, and don't have to pay their staff as much for fewer days, etc. So that's clearly going on. In terms of the cost of living crisis, have there been any change behaviours in the house of web in terms of how to deal with the cost pressures?
There seems to be a lot more blankets about the place. we're not using the heat as much.
Are they all complaining about the heat whenever they're going around wearing t-shirts and stuff?
Exactly.
Takes me to the fair.
You know, the teens in the house, need to put on extra layers. I suppose we've just reviewed everything over the last 12 months. I actually did a December 21 versus December 22 inflation rate in House of Web, and it was 22%. So largely driven by energy costs and the mortgage rate, which was going up. So we've looked at that. We've tried to reduce what we use. We've changed providers on the gas and electricity. So, you know, there are ways to try and mitigate some of it, but not, you can't get rid of it all. So we are facing into choices at the minute, you know.
No, that's something that we've done as well in terms of changing gas providers, which is something I never would have considered, but courtesy of the Consumer Council, who have flagged price differentials and what people are charging. It's been something I've done, and also an Economy 7 night meter for the electric car in terms of charging that up at a lower rate, and then trying migrate all the other functions on to be like cooking, tumble dryer, and all of that. If it's on in the middle of the night, it's cheaper.
You've gone electric car, I've gone electric bike.
That probably shows on our waistlines. Meanwhile, it's the cat and mouse game of closing windows in our house that my wife has opened continues. But anyway, so I suppose in terms of, so that was last year. And, you know, we had inflation hitting a 41-year high. We had interest rates started the year at 0.25%, 3.5% they ended. Labour market was the kind of dog that didn't really bark. In terms, when we talk about recessions, we always think about job losses, rising unemployment. That didn't happen. Redundancies are at really low levels. Although we are at this point in time, I think, and we're going to go on to sort of 2023 and this year, you know, labour market is one of the themes I think we're going to see a lot of change on. Even when you hear the likes of the mighty Amazon is shedding, I think it was
17,000, 18,000.
Yeah, 18,000 jobs. Yeah. You know, so that's kind of significant. Yeah. Closing down three warehouses in the UK. So I suppose in terms of 2023 and outlook, in terms of economic growth, where do you think the economy is going or transitioning from?
I think it is transition year. I think that this is the year where we will be in recession. Hopefully by the end of it, the big numbers in all the wrong places that we have now will have ebbed away. So I would hope that we have a lot lower inflation rates. I think that's hopefully past its peak. We'll see, I suppose, in April as well, when energy supports start to ebb away, what that means. But I would hope that inflation's past its peak. Probably a couple more interest rate increases to come, unfortunately, because we're now going to have more people coming out of mortgage deals. I mean, since going back to work in the last number of days, people have asked me, I don't know, people think economists know about mortgages and what's going to happen in mortgage rates. Happy to offer any advice, but not qualified to do so. So go and speak to an advisor. But I've been asked a number of times what's likely to happen and what should they do? Should they fix or should they let the rate float? So lots of people have come into the new year looking ahead a couple of months thinking the mortgage rates are going to, you know, their deals are over. So that's going to impact on them. Then there's the whole mix of just, you know, the sectors that struggled in the pandemic that bounced back well. You know, hospitality had a good season last summer and autumn. Is it going to sustain?
Or September had a record room sales.
Yeah, so you know, things like that, and we did very well from people from the south coming up, and actually the sterling issue, the collapse of sterling for a period helped there. And there's a lot of Americans who are really hungry to travel again, so that's good for Ireland. The more we can get in Northern Ireland, the better. So there's that, and it's all very mixed at the minute. It's very lots of moving parts, but I think the 2023 is going to be worse, probably, feeling for people. I think a lot of the fear and the sentiment will be negative sentiment that people were feeling. I think a lot of that will start to be realized in terms of their ability to spend and actually having to implement some of the cost saving measures that people will have to do. You know, it was very, at the tail end of last year, the consumer sentiment was really low. We saw Tourism NI coming out with sentiment surveys talking about how people, I think it was 70%, or in that range anyway, 70% of that sample were talking about eliminating big ticket items like a car or a kitchen, or but even cutting back on clothing spend and cutting back on gym subscriptions and Netflix and Spotify type subscriptions. So there's lots of squeeze, I think, going to happen in that area, and that then moves through the rest of the economy.
Because that was already happening last year. There was the ASDA income tracker, which I think latest figures are for the third quarter, where it was a year-on-year fall in disposable household income. In real terms, and then that's all their discretionary spend, that's down. It was in the order of 28% or something year on year, and that was in the third quarter. That's going to get worse. Q4 and into this year. So that is a big, going to be a big challenge and a big squeeze.
Yeah, so I think this is the year, 2023 is the year we start to feel that impact on living standards that we've been told is going to happen, you know, with the OBR and the Bank of England talking about this living standards decline.
Yeah,
I think that's when
we're not going to have the anaesthetic of furlough schemes or a lot of those kind of pandemic measures, which and support for businesses that they received. That's gone. So it's kind of this year is going to be no safety net, as it were, in terms of that. Yeah, yeah. And I suppose in terms of then, yeah, the labour market, because the other interesting thing from last year and going into this year is in terms of the labour market is the skill shortages, which we still still have those. And even the likes of when we look at, there was the nijobs.com job vacancy index. If you look at the likes of the health sector, there are 11 times as many vacancies advertised, you know, sort of at the end of last year relative to what it was like at the start of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And health is the most obvious one, but, you know, you go across all the categories, whether it's finance, banking, you know, manufacturing, and that is skill shortages is a key problem.
Yeah, I mean, the labour market has confounded expectations for so long and has, you know, confused labour market watchers. It should have declined by now, you would expect, given all that negative sentiment and you know, likes of the PMIs coming through with new orders, you know, declining and all of that. You would expect to have seen a labour market reduction in employment numbers, and we haven't. In fact, the story now is one of, as you say, the sort of skills challenges and gaps. I suppose what we have seen quite recently is just we see vacancy numbers still very high, but we're starting to see a slowdown in new vacancies coming through. So the jobs aren't being filled and they're sitting vacant for a significant period of time, but the number of new posts coming through on a weekly basis seems to be slowing down quite dramatically now. So there's maybe that.
And what's happened to labour supply? Where have all the people gone?
I think, you know, there's a migration issue. I think, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of people left and haven't returned. And then we've got the Brexit challenges in the mix of all that. So that's an element of it. We have had people leaving the labour market and looking at it and thinking, you know, they can retire. So they have, and people have just left the labour market. So there's lots happening in that in terms of people moving out, early retirement or, you know, economically inactive now, and then the migrant labour issue is one that's real. So
it's whether the kind of cost of living crisis, energy costs, all of that, then kind of pushes some people who then did retire early or became economically inactive, that it actually kind of reactivates them to then try and come back into the labour market. Mm-hmm. But some of the figures that I thought were interesting was when we look at economic inactivity, where some of the areas where we've seen a rise were particularly in the younger, some of the younger age groups, you know, the 25 to sort of 40, where there seems to be economic inactivity sort of rising there. And there's also a higher incidence of long-term sickness in a lot of those younger age groups. So I think we're maybe also seeing as well, it's a bit of the backwash from the COVID and the whole lockdowns and issues such as mental health. And, you know, I think those are going to be things which will hit us and become more apparent in the coming months and years. But I suppose then, in terms of turning to then the housing market, sir, what are your thoughts about the year ahead? Like last year, we had, as of the third quarter, prices up 9-10% up. Yeah. I think it's 26% since the pandemic started. So it was all, the housing market was one of those sectors which had a good pandemic.
Yes.
But it seemed to be then tailing off, particularly in terms of transactions last year.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think we still benefit somewhat from the hybrid working model and the fact that people who have left Northern Ireland or even just are in England can sell up there, come to Northern Ireland, have a great house for a lot less money, and make the job, make the career work. I think there's still a bit of that. I think that was quite a trend, certainly when I was talking to estate agents during the pandemic and towards the tail end of lockdowns. That was a real thing.
And with the cost of living crisis continuing this year, you know, that's going to be the attractiveness of checking out of a high cost of living place, particularly when you're thinking about private school fees and all of those sort of things that Northern Ireland has that unique advantage going forward.
So that gives us something in the positive column, whereas construction costs up and, you know, the number of houses being built seem to be, and the mortgage rates and the fact that a lot of those savings that were built up during the pandemic have not totally, but seem to have, you know, a significant proportion of them have been used on various things. So savings rates are quite low again. The rate of people's savings are quite low again. And so there's not that cushion being built up. So housing market has probably, you know, it looks a bit soft at the minute. I'd be concerned if I was thinking about where the prices are going up. I don't think there's much growth in the housing market this year.
Yeah, and I'd probably be more bearish than that in terms of we'll probably see prices falling, but everybody always gets sensitive in terms of prices. And, you know, and recently, last week, I was then asked, what would you recommend, if it was an individual's children were trying to get on the property ladder, what would you recommend? And the issue in terms of, like, should they wait, are prices going to fall? And I think the issue is going to be more on the asking prices. Mm. So what we saw over the last couple of years were the asking prices became your starter for 10 in terms of it just fired the starting pistol for the bidding wars that went on. Whereas, you know, so now what you're seeing is whatever the asking price is going to be a more realistic view of where the price is going to go, and you're not going to necessarily get that bidding war, particularly with the cost of living crisis. Mortgage rates, people's affordability has changed. Banks' affordability calculators won't let individuals borrow as much, so that all has to feed through, and there's a kind of reset in the property market there. But I think the interesting one is particularly on the kind of buy-to-let, particularly those, you know, if you have people still the kind of legacy of interest-only mortgages for buy-to-let, and given where interest rates are going, you know, that's clearly going to have issues there. But I suppose if we look looking at some of the sectors which could prosper or suffer during this year, what do you think? Because retail is obviously one of the ones which is going to be vulnerable and to the cost of living crisis, similarly the hospitality sector, but what sectors do you think could do well?
Yeah, as you say, retail's very vulnerable at the moment, and you know, and yet I suppose today we did have Christmas trading figures from a lot of the supermarkets and some of the other shops have come out this week. It seems like people made a real effort to have a Christmas and to make that work in terms of spending in supermarkets and the like. So I think maybe they've done okay. We'll see where they go in the next number of weeks and months. That will be difficult for them. Obviously, food price inflation's probably supporting the values rather than the volumes of transactions there. I mean, hospitality is one that I think, you know, there could be a good season come spring and summer, because as I say, all the indications that I read about in terms of a US willingness to travel and their ability to travel seems positive, and certainly, while I don't think international travel will be back at pre-pandemic levels yet, I think that could bring a significant number of people to the island in spring and summer. There are events happening and that's all springing back into life. So that
and also
might not be the worst performance that you would maybe necessarily think. I mean, I think pubs and restaurants maybe in the next month or so domestically will struggle. But I think as the tourist season gets back up and running, we could see hopefully some fillip there.
Yeah, and obviously we also then share a land border with the Republic of Ireland, which is one of the most least affected economies from the current kind of slowdown downturn at the minute. So unlike if we think back to the 2008-09 and the aftermath of that, you know, it was the we were sharing a land border of with the economy, which after Greece was experiencing the biggest declines and had the IMF knocking on its door and everything. So that kind of negative spillover effects that really hit Northern Ireland is going to work in the opposite direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully for to help us get through this difficult patch. Mm-hmm.
Sectors that might do well, I mean, I think you get quite niche in terms of sectors. You mean to talk about manufacturing and it could have a hard year, but when you sort of delve into other areas of manufacturing, I mean, our life and health sciences sector is particularly strong and vibrant at the moment. I think they could
recession
do well.
Recession proof.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we've been particularly good at the likes of cybersecurity and professional services and ICT and all that. That there's no red flags there for me at the moment in terms of how they'll perform. So there will be pockets of growth and pockets of strong performance across quite niche areas of the economy, but as a whole, and certainly those that are consumer facing, domestic consumer facing, I should say, will struggle the most.
Yeah, and I one of the sectors I think is going to struggle the most, arguably, is going to be the public sector. You know, in terms of we had the strike action sort of like kicking in at the tail end of last year, and I think it's inevitable that there's going to be more and more of that because there isn't the money to provide the pay rises that public sector employees expect, want, need, or so. What are your thoughts on terms of the public sector?
Of course, the money's there. I wrote a piece recently that said that most of the money finds its way back to Treasury anyway. So if you give the pay rise to public sector workers, a significant chunk of it's taxed. They go out and spend it because, I mean, savings rates at the minute, you know, about 5% of income saved currently. So, you know, that's all spent. So that finds its way back into the system. And so much of a pay rise to the likes of nurses and public sector workers will find its way back to Treasury. So, you know, think again in terms of how affordable that is. Locally, you know, obviously we have a different budgetary setup. We're in dire straits in terms of our own budget. So there are big challenges in the public sector this year. But maybe that's the time to finally start making some of the really difficult decisions that we've always kicked down the road. You know, when we think about, you know, some of those, we'll take the health service, for example, having experienced it recently, it is on its knees. And yet we have reports from Nuffield Trust via the Fiscal Council that, you know, we do things very ineffectively and we could save $440 million a year just by doing inpatient, outpatient, day patient type things differently or the same as England, which is no paragon of efficiency. And
do you think the NHS is broken?
It is. Well, it's completely broken. I mean, morale-wise, it's broken. I've had other cause to use the NHS in the last while. My youngest has needed an endoscopy and she's 8. And when we just knowing that it was going to take so long, we ended up, and very fortunate to be able to do so, we ended up paying to have that done. And the doctor who did that told us that in the NHS, as an 8-year-old, he'd probably see her when she was 12. You know, and that's just so unacceptable.
Yeah.
So it needs absolute change. And it needs, you know, we have the answers. We've had Bengoa for how many years? 6, 7. So, yeah. You know, there's a path there to follow, but nobody's decided to follow it yet.
Yeah. And I think this comes down to the kind of perma-crisis where a lot of this isn't just COVID. It dates back over the last 10 years and arguably back from sort of where austerity manifested itself in terms of, you know, pay cuts, capital spending, all of these kind of things in terms of infrastructure, that so many things, it's a bit like whenever you say in the long term, if you actually put things off, the long term someday arrives. And in many ways, I think whether it's with NHS, whether it's how they've treated sort of nurses, doctors' pay, because I think that's one of the big issues there, where you're just going to see potentially, you talk about migration, there's going to be emigration of potentially our medical staff, where you're reading in the papers about Australian hospitals and medical recruiters then coming over to then just try and encourage doctors to go over to Australia, or similarly in Canada and New Zealand, get double the wage, better weather. Yeah. You know, what's not to like? And I think that's going to be a challenge. Where how do you can't, even if you have the money, throwing money at it quickly isn't necessarily going to have a result, because it, I suppose, one of the things, if we think of what is the word for 2023, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's going to be morale. It's going to be a critical year for the whole cost of living crisis. It's been a bit like a marathon. We're maybe half through the halfway stage, and we need the Lucozade Sport and tablets and energy drinks or sachets to try and get us through. And morale is just going to be, people are just fatigued from the cost of living crisis, energy costs, and there's more to come. And of course, we've got tax rises coming in sort of in April as well. It reminds me of the old Gladiators on a Saturday night, when it was the Eliminator at the end with the big pugil sticks and running up the Travelator. You know, we're still being hit with taxes, energy costs, all of those kind of things are still to come. And it's just tiring.
Yeah, morale is a good word. I think, you know, when we think about the health service and we think about the people that work in it, I don't think it is just about throwing more money at them. I think, you know, any time I've engaged with them, they're deeply passionate about providing care, and everything just seems to be conspiring to make their jobs more difficult.
And the goodwill is kind of gone. It's almost like we've played that card for so many years, and now people are just kind of busted. And it's
So they're worn out, and morale's low. And then we think roll that out into an economy, and as you describe it, like being pummeled, then, you know, for left and right. So, you know, you had morale as a word for next year. I think my word I was going to go with hot mess, but I think it's two words, so I'm not entirely sure. But I think it does sum up where we could be over the next number of months, which, again, if we don't have an executive, we're heading into an election for local government, you know, so that usually crunches things in terms of the willingness to reach settlements, and the, you know, that delays us then further, and that just makes those big decisions harder to reach. So, you know, the first half of this year, probably we won't see any significant change in how we do Northern Ireland, and that's to our detriment. And then as the year goes on, we think about all of those issues that just aren't being addressed, the infrastructure challenges that we have, education, health service, all of that needs fixed.
Infrastructure, water and sewage, and it's all that, the kind of like, if the executive does come back and gets up and running again this year, which we hope it does, it's going to have an in-tray from hell.
It is.
You know, and it's, I've written an article about it's 2023 will be as unpalatable as a Bush-Tucker trial. And, you know, in terms of what has to be done, and, you know, only yesterday we had the review into Invest Northern Ireland, and that's like another area of reform. Mm. And it's reform, there's protocol, there's the NHS. There just isn't the bandwidth to deal with all those problems all at the same time. And, you know, it is going to be difficult. I suppose, Andrew, in terms of thinking some of the other themes, what do you think other themes will be for this year, whether it's, you know, global, national or local?
It's a year that's going to push my natural optimism to its limits, I have to say. It just feels like it is hopefully that sort of transitional year where, you know, I think a recession's baked in at this point, but, you know, hopefully it's shallow, and hopefully we're through it the course of sort of by summer, or certainly pointing towards being out of it by then. I mean, a lot of that depends on Russia, Ukraine, and how the Chinese economy goes, and all of that interlinking between global trade flows and all of that. So
one of the words I saw talking about China and the from the second quarter of this year is gangbusters. So in terms of where it's being hit, and the global economy is being hit in terms of the current wave of COVID. But whenever that kind of passes, then economic growth, in the same way as India rebounded after its outbreak of COVID last year, it's going to be strong demand. But that's clearly a positive and helped the global economy. But the one downside for that is that what other kind of analysts are saying is that will push oil prices and energy prices back up as they demand the commodities. So it's what you get in growth recovery, you know, you're just going to have then potentially that just feeding through into energy costs again.
Yeah. But I think an opportunity in the year and certainly years ahead is just, you know, that need to move away from the reliance on gas and fossil fuels and how that's been amplified by what's happening in Russia and Ukraine. So we're starting to shift the dial on the green issue, and the more we can do that, and, I mean, there's massive opportunities in that for the likes of green new deals and green jobs and, you know, become more energy self-sufficient. So I think that's something that could be tapped into as an opportunity for the next year or and more.
Mm-hmm. And even when you're talking about green and sort of energy, on the when we look back at some of the winners of last year, if you look at even electric cars, of which I was one, they rose 49% in Northern Ireland last year. The likes of Tesla, there was a 90% increase in Tesla sales. So it wasn't all bad for Elon Musk.
Elon did all right.
Northern Ireland motorists are trying to do their bit to try and buy his cars. But and in terms of the, I suppose one of the upsides potentially could be if energy costs do ease, that we could see this improving public finances, where there could be a slight room for manoeuvre with the Chancellor later in the year. Although I think the focus is going to be on maybe more, in terms of tax rises, it will be on reducing reliefs, tax reliefs, and kind of focusing on that.
I think so. I think with an election coming up that, you know, everyone seems to think is an absolute shoe-in for Labour. 2025 for general election?
By the end of 2024. So, yeah, I think it's January 2025. So,
I would expect that the Chancellor will start to try and spend some money somewhere, or certainly not increase tax burdens on
more
voters.
Kind of help to buy housing market, get that simulated ahead of an election.
Stuff,
seems to be a
like
trial
that, yeah.
Trial and tested policy.
Yeah, so if he has any wiggle room in the budgets, which he may do, I'd say he'd start to try and push some money down to try and shore up their vote.
Yep. And I suppose locally, in terms of we're coming up to the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, do you think we'll see the local politicians getting back into the Parliament buildings? Which just to add, as a that was one of my offices back in the day in 1997 when I joined the civil service as an economist, and was based up in Parliament buildings. And then one of the downsides of that Good Friday Agreement was we were kicked out of that and moved from those palatial offices to porta cabins at the Rathgale roundabout in Bangor, which I think you were maybe even in the same office as I used to be in.
That's when I joined. I was in a porta cabin in Rathgale, and that's probably why my civil service career didn't take off. Nobody could enjoy a porta cabin in Rathgale.
No.
The 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement, as you say, coming up with this investment conference that's been announced. I was asked this week, what's the pitch that Northern Ireland makes? Is it, sure, come on in, it'll be grand? I've heard worse pitches for investors. At the minute, that feels like, oh, that's kind of all we've got in terms of a pitch. So I would hope there's an executive formed before that. I think it would be a bit of a damp squib if we come up to 25 years and we don't have an executive. I think that would be make that investment conference a much harder sell. So I live in hope.
Okay, thanks very much, Andrew. Until next time, I am Richard Ramsey, and this was episode 24 of the Ulster Economics Podcast, That's So Last Year, with Andrew Webb, Chief Economist with Grant Thornton. You can stay up to date by following us on social media and the ulstereconomics.com blog.